Welcome to the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, where you get multifamily investing made real. Learn from top players in the real estate investment world as they share their secrets with you and discover proven strategies on apartment investing that actually work. To learn more about Wheelbarrow Profits, visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. Now to your hosts, Jake and Gino.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenziano, host of the Wheelbarrow Profits podcast, here with my co-host, the best-selling author of the hit book Wheelbarrow Profits, serial entrepreneur, multifamily land baron, proud papa six, a.k.a. the G-Daddy, Mr. Gino Barbaro. How's it going?
J-Love, how you doing, J-Love?
It's good, Big Daddy. Today, we're going to introduce the finance right portion of our framework and discuss how we finance our properties for the greatest yield and investment stability. We're also going to discuss the options that are out there for financing your deals. So Gino, tell the listeners, why is it so crucial to finance right?
Well, this is, I guess, the third leg of our strategy, of our framework. I mean, this is a crucial step for you guys to get right. Now, the first thing I can tell you is it's going to be hard to finance your properties in the beginning. And it's supposed to be hard because you've never done it before. We never did it before. We made tons of mistakes. We're going to go through our mistakes in this call. But you know what? By making mistakes, you just keep pulling ahead and you're finally going to figure it out. And we're going to shorten your learning curve with this podcast. That's what we're here to do, to shorten that learning curve and give you our mistakes, what we did wrong and how you can avoid them. Basically, finance right is the bread and meat and potatoes, as Jake likes to call it. I like to say bread because I'm Italian, so I love bread. But basically, you really want to finance your properties. You really want that stability. You want long amortizations. You want long terms on your deals. You don't want to all of a sudden wake up one day and you have 60 days left on your deal and interest rates have gone from 4% to 8%. That'll just going to blow up your cash flow. So you really have to, you know, zero in on your financing. What you really should do is get our credibility book, learn how to set up a credibility book, learn how to get all your case studies done, get your credibility book together, and start networking with bankers and with brokers, and even with private money. People out there with private money, that's part of the finance, right? You want to be able to get in front of people, put that book in front of people and say, hey, listen, this is what I'm looking for. You want to make a great connection with a banker. We got fortunate. We got in with a bank down where we are in our local market. We're going to talk about community banks, the portfolio banks. We're going to talk all about that. You really need to get in touch and really get involved with a banker.
I think that point that you just made there about the balloon payments is so huge, because you have a five-year term and everything's going great. You're in year two or three, and then all of a sudden interest rates start to creep up. And yeah, okay, I got 2 years left on this thing. Then bam, you're up 2 or 3 points higher than you were. That can get scary. That can really change the deal over time. So you got to really be mindful of that and look for the longest terms, as Gino said, possible.
Now, let me stress one thing. If you don't buy the asset right, you're going to have problems financing the asset. So the first step, you got to go back and listen to our Buy Right podcast. With you, the ability to buy that asset right, you're going to be able to finance it correctly when you buy it. And then when you reposition it, you're going to be able to refi and pull that money out, which is exciting, which is part of our business model, which is what me and Jake are going to be talking about in this podcast.
That's a great point. So if you go back to two podcasts ago, we did the first podcast on buy right. So what does that mean? That's the first leg of our framework. It means that you're going to buy a property that meets your specific investment requirements. We like to talk about 8% caps and 10% cash on cash returns. That's the first step. The second step is to manage right. What we mean by manage right is we're going to reposition that property, that underperforming asset. We're going to fill the vacant units at market. We're going to implement a RUB system, which is a water billback system, and we're going to raise the remaining rents to market rates. That's after the fact. So you're buying an underperforming asset. You're going to buy it with a community bank. You're going to reposition it, and then that's when the true finance right strategy comes into play. Now, what our true finance right strategy looks like is we're gonna take that underperforming asset, buy it with a community bank, because we're gonna be able to get it closed quickly. We're gonna get to lock it up. We look at this as almost a bridge loan, because we're not gonna be there for long. We don't want a prepayment penalty on this loan. So that's one of the things we're gonna negotiate up front, because we're gonna try to move this to the secondary market. We're gonna talk about the secondary market in a minute. So we're buying the underperforming asset, we're repositioning, we're fixing it up, making it worth more. And then at that point, maybe a year, year and a half down the road, we're going to refinance that property and pull our money out. Now, this is the key here. These are the things that you really must focus on. When we go to the refi, to the secondary market, to the Fannie type products, the key here is we're going from a recourse loan to a non-recourse loan. We're going from maybe a 20 or 25 year amortization to a 30 year amortization, and we're going to lower the interest rate. Now, Gino, you want to talk to the folks a little bit about non-recourse and the difference between recourse and non-recourse?
Sure. Let me just step back real quick. Sure. About Jake was talking about 20-year and 25-year amortizations, and I had spoken about how we made mistakes. On our first deal, we made, I wouldn't say a big mistake, but looking back at it, we didn't do our diligence on our finance right. We were just thrilled, me and Jake, to finally land a deal. It was awesome. We had bought the property. We'd even gotten owner financing, which was just amazing. We bought the property for $600,000. We got 10% owner financing and 10% down. So let's fast forward. What we had gotten on the deal, we'd gotten a high interest rate, Jake, right? It was over 5%, the
rate. It was 6%.
It was a 20-year amort. So we're going to fast forward to last month. We just refinanced this property. It took about 2.5 years. This was what Jake likes to refer to as the crack den. It needed a lot of work. It was a lot of work in this property. This is not easy stuff. I don't want people to think, oh, I'm going to buy a property, you know, do a little work. This one actually was a lot of work. We had a lot of fun doing it. You know, it's fun when you hear the mail lady coming by and saying, listen, I was scared of delivering mail in this property. And a year later, she likes the place. It's nice getting a tenant survey coming back from people saying, hey, listen, this sounds like, you know, I'm finally home. They're great things. This is why we're in the business. It's modern affordability. It's the ability for us to make money, but it's the ability to give people a place to live. So this property was bought for $600,000 2.5 years ago. It'll be 3 years in February. We refied it last month. It came back at an appraisal of $800,000. We were able to pull all of our money out. But the awesome part about it was we got a great rate, about 4.5%, right, Jake?
4.19.
Wow, that's even better. We got a 25-year amort. So what happens to the payment? The payment basically stayed the same as when we had bought it. So as you can see, we didn't finance it right when we bought it. If we had financed it right when we bought it, we would probably cash flow even more for the first 2 years. That's why I say it was a mistake the way we did it. But it's not a mistake because we jumped into the property. We took our lumps. We learned. And we were still making money while we did all this. So 2 years down the road, the emerging market, the ability for us to increase the rents, the ability for us to decrease the expenses, the NOI goes up. That all leads to that higher appraisal of $200,000. We pulled all of our money out. We paid off the first loan. We've got a second. The loan is refinanced, and I mean, it was just awesome.
Yeah, no, that worked out really well. And in the true finance right strategy that we're talking about, where you're gonna again buy the underperforming asset, you're gonna refi it, and we really like to focus on the Fannie type products that are out there, the CMBS and Fannie type products, and this is what we refer to as the secondary market. Now here you're able to go from a recourse loan, which means if you default on the property, then your personal assets are held liable, to a non-recourse loan, which basically says this property is supporting itself and your personal assets are not going to be held liable if you were to default on that loan. The you know, Fannie lenders look at it that this is a slam dunk, very secure product, our property, and we're going to give you a non-recourse loan on it. So we're going from the recourse to the non-recourse. We're going from the 20 or 25 year AM to the 30. Now what that's going to do is that's going to increase your cash flow because it's going to extend your payments out over 30-year period instead of 20 or 25. And on top of that, going to a Fannie-type product, you're going to be able to lower your interest rate.
And on top of that, you'll get that 10-year term as opposed to a lot of these products that you're originally getting. You might get a 5 or 7 year term. With these Fannie products, you usually get a 10-year term. And it's important, especially if you're raising private money, you're going to get a lot of high net worth individuals who really know their stuff. They've got money because they know how to invest. And a lot of them love this non-recourse. What happens when you go non-recourse? These rich guys, as I like to call them, guys that I love to look up to, they say it comes off your balance sheet. So it's very important for these, you know, guys that you're raising private money with. They want the stuff off of their balance sheet. They'll look stronger to the banks. They'll appear as if they're having less debt. Even though the debt is being serviced by the property, banks still look at it as debt, which is really mind-boggling to me, but they do. They look at it as debt. So that non-recourse is really powerful for these high net worth individuals. They want it off their balance sheet. There's no recourse from the bank other than the property itself.
Yeah. Now, it's definitely something that we've heard referred to as investment nirvana, because you were held liable for it, and now it's coming off the books. So it's really cool. A lot of these guys that are looking to invest, if you're looking for partners, they're going to like to hear that, okay, I have some non-recourse options. So the secondary market looks like this. You have your CMBS, your commercial-backed securities, and you have your Fannie and Freddie-type lenders out there. A few things here. We are currently looking to do 10-year terms on 30-year amortizations. Now, to be the most secure, as you know, the most secure you could possibly be would be a 30-30, which would be a 30-year term, 30-year amortization. These are assumable loans. The issue with that is that if you are going to want to sell the property and rates change and it's not a good market to assume the current loan that you have, you may not want to do a 30-30. There's some debate there. Definitely the most secure place to be in a low interest rate market is a 30-30, but you can't predict the future. And if you want to move that property, you may not be able to do that on a 30-30, 30-year term, 30-year amortization. So we're currently doing 10-30s right now. But there is that option to do the 30-30.
Jake and I forgot to really talk about residential loans and commercial loans. We like to deal with commercial loans. And basically what a commercial loan is, anything that's 5 units or greater. Residential is 4 or less. Commercial is 5 or greater. And what I found to be really, really odd is it's probably easier to get a commercial loan of 5 or more, because they normally deal with the property itself and the income from the property. When you're going with 4 units or less, and I have a 4-unit right near where I live, when you're dealing with 4 units or less, the appraisal is really key. They don't really look at income, although they do look at income, obviously, but it's not, and they look at the actual person, you know, your credit score and your debt and all that. They look at you. But when you're doing 5 or higher, that commercial loan, the banks like to focus on what the property is doing and the actual, you know, aspects of the property, and you give them the income approach to it, which I think is awesome. And the other thing they look at is what I like to talk about is having partners. It's great to have partners, because the more partners you have, the more the banks like to see that. Banks like to see people with strong balance sheets. So, you know, we have a partner who's got a strong balance sheet. It helps us with our financing. But 4 or less, remember, it's a residential loan. 5 or more, it's commercial.
And what specifically what Gino's talking about, the difference is the difference between a comps approach on the appraisal and an income approach. A comps approach will look at similar transactions in the area, and they'll kind of get an average there. Versus the income approach, if you're bringing in you know, a lot more money than one of your comps, and you have a higher NOI, that's going to be reflected in your appraisal.
What Jake and I did in a previous podcast, we did a podcast with a banker, Mike Saperito, our banker down there. I want you guys to go back and listen to that, and he's going to talk to you about all the different types of banks out there, community banks. I think that's really important to hear from him. What I want to jump into now really is talk about seller financing and talk about how you can get into seller financing and, you know, a couple of our deals and how they work. You know, you've heard people talk about seller financing, and they'll say, can't do it, can't be done. You know what? For the majority of the deals that you see out there, when you're looking at a retail deal, I agree with them. It can't be done. The first thing that me and Jake figured out was you need to have a broker on your team who at least knows what a seller financing means, owner financing. He has to understand that they work. He has to understand how they work. You have to be able to educate the seller who's selling the property. Listen, this deal is going to work for you. A lot of them don't even know what the heck they are. Seller financing only works in certain areas. I want to talk about where they work, and then I want to go into the favorable terms about seller financing, and then I'm going to talk to you how we structure them in our deals and how we look for them. The only way that seller financing is going to work in your deal is if you have a motivated seller. That's the only way in real estate you're going to make money and you're going to buy right. If you're looking at a property, an A property in an A area that's cash flowing great, why would he be motivated to sell to you? I mean, it's next to nothing. You're not going to get a deal on that property. You have to look for a property where you can create value or you can add value to the seller. So what is a motivated seller? I'm going to go through a few of these really quick for you. So just listen up and let me go through them real quick. Motivated seller can be anyone who's down on their luck. First one can be someone who's getting a divorce. They get divorced, they want out. Second one could be a partner acrimony. And we've seen this a lot in our deals. We like to target mom and pop apartments. Basically, they are just mom and pop owners. They can be small, 20 units, 10 units, 5 units. They can go all the way up. We purchased one with 288 units. They could be any size. They're just really basically businesses that aren't being run properly. They have no systems in place. And if there's partners, mom, pops, family, there's acrimony, they want to get out of it. So they're motivated to sell. That's a great area to use owner financing. Third one, someone's down on their luck, it's bankrupt. They just went in bankruptcy. They're motivated to sell that property. Fourth one is burned out. This you can tell by the property. Driving by a property, you can tell when a seller is just burned out. You can see the property is just run down. There's deferred maintenance. There's a high vacancy on the property. The income is not where it's supposed to be. You can definitely see that that's a motivated seller. The fifth one is inherited. If somebody's inheriting a property, they've never seen it before, it's free money to them, they don't want to deal with it, hey, that's a great place to look for it. Next one is someone who has bad health. I mean, we got that in our first deal. One of the members was in bad health and he had to sell the property. So that made his situation motivated. Next one is people are retired. We landed our last deal. They just want to retire. They just want to get out. They don't care. They've owned the property a while. They want to, as Jake would say, down the golden path. They want retirement. They're out. Next one, which people don't really think about, is someone has another business opportunity. They need the cash to raise it. So when you negotiate with people, it's always great to listen to what their story is. If you hear them say, oh, you know, I'm buying another property, or I'm just getting into another deal, another venture, I need cash, that's a motivated seller for you. Next one could be relocation. Someone is living in, let's say, where Jake lives in Knoxville, Tennessee. All of a sudden, hey, I want to go up. I want to live in Denver, Colorado. That's where a lot of people seem like they're going. They're stuck with a property. They want to get rid of that property. They're relocating. Another one that I find, and it's happened to me also, is code violations. You know, people have problems with their buildings. All of a sudden, towns are looking for money. They're going in and they're doing a lot of these inspections. People don't have the money to cure these violations, just to fix these problems. They just want to sell the property. That's a great motivated seller for you. Another one that we find is someone who has a 1031 deal going on. Now, if you have a 1031 deal going on, never tell the person you're doing a 1031 because they know that you have certain time constraints. 1031 is basically buying a property, rolling the money over into another property that's larger and deferring the capital gains on it. You do not want them to know. If you know somebody's doing a 1031, they have time constraints. They might be motivated to sell that property. Next one we touched on before was the family infighting. Partner acrimony, family infighting is huge.
We've seen that one a few times, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that one pops up a lot. I mean, you know, they want to get out. I mean, they've been doing it for a while. Business is hard. And when you're not making money in business, it's hard to work for free. So they just want to get out. Another one that I want to touch on is out-of-town investors. We've seen a couple of these, right, Jake? Where people are out of town. They're managing it. They're doing okay. Someone in California likes to invest in Knoxville because they see the Knoxville market is doing $40,000 per unit, where in California it's $100,000 per unit. They overbuy. They think they're getting a great price, but they're not because they're overpaying in the market, and they're stuck. They're not cash flowing anymore. They just want out. That's a great.
Picked up two of those, Gino.
Yeah, they're. I love to look at those. Another one we like to see is when they have this will tie in with the out of town investor, because sometimes they'll hire a poor management company. If you have a poor management company and that second wheel, we like to call it the wheel of our wheelbarrow. If you're just not running the property, it would drive you nuts, and you'll just want to get out of that property. And that's motivated seller there. The last one is no bank financing available. All of a sudden, the property, he's trying to sell it, and no bank's going to finance this property. I mean, no bank wants to touch it. So what's going to happen, especially if they have a lot of equity, this is a great place to tell the guy, listen, why don't you owner finance it? And, you know, there's different type ways of doing it. A lot of these sellers might have a lot of equity. The more equity they have in the property, the easier it is to seller finance this property.
Yeah, those are all great ways. And the thing that we find, these are all keywords. So if you are talking to a broker and you're hearing divorced, they're out of town, family infighting, listen for this stuff, because it's not just this is not just a list that we've seen this time and time again. Family infighting is huge. Out of town is huge. And a lot of this is what makes up a mom and pop apartment complex. And as Gino alluded to earlier, these things come in all shapes and sizes, and there's tremendous value here. We've seen them. We bought them from 24 units, 16 units, all the way up to 281 units. So they're all across the board, the size of these things. And at the end of the day, they all provide tremendous value. Gino, did you want to touch on the 281 unit with mom and pop?
Let me go over a few of the things that you can actually I want you guys to educate your real estate broker and your seller on why seller financing is awesome. It's great for both parties.
I love it.
First of all, the sellers may be looking to defer capital gains. You know, you sell the property, you've got a big capital gains tax hit, let's say $500,000. Instead of them taking that $500,000 lump and getting a cap gain hit on it, what they can do is they can defer it and take payments. So they can hold the note for $500,000 and get $50,000 worth of payments for the year. That will save them money on capital gains. Also, they might want a higher rate of return. We saw that with our last deal. Guy got $2 million. He held a note for $2 million for us. What's he going to do with that money? I mean, basically, he's just going to go to the bank and put it in the bank for 0.8%. He lent us the money at 4.5%. So he's making four times the money that he would if he just stuck it in the bank. So some people are looking for a rate of return. That's an awesome way to get a rate of return now that the rates are low. Gives the buyer protection. Gives the seller protection. If you default on the property, seller's going to take the property back. So, I mean, you're going to put some money down, seller's going to take that property back. He's got that protection. And also, when you were doing owner financing, you know, if you're getting the terms, the seller is going to be able to get a little bit higher of a price. So sellers are going to be looking for a little bit higher of a price. You might be able to negotiate a lower price, but it's either price or terms. If you're getting awesome terms on a deal, you can always go up a little bit higher and meet him at his price as long as you're getting the terms on the property.
Yeah. And there's another trick that we like to do, which is get the owner to finance the down payment. You don't always have to have them hold the note for the entire property. If you have them finance the down payment, say it's 20%, then they're going to get a nice chunk of change back at closing because they're going to get 80% back from the sale. And then they're only going to hold 20% of that note. And we've executed that one a couple times, and it's worked to our advantage.
Let me just give you a few terms of what you want to structure your seller financing. First thing I would say is just put in the contract no due on sale clause. So if you sell the property and someone else takes that note over, you know, banks, what they normally do is they have a due on sale for that mortgage. That mortgage is going to get called in. You don't want that to happen. Put it in there for yourself to protect yourself. The second one Jake had alluded to earlier was the prepayment penalty. Don't put any prepayment penalty in this note. And I don't think any seller is going to really balk at that. Let's say 2 years from now, you're into a 7-year note and you're into 2 years. You just want to pay it off. Just pay it off in full. You won't have any prepayment penalty. Third one is try to get as long as you can on these amortization rates. You know, the longer the amortization table, the better it is for you, more cash flow. So we look for 25 to 30 years. We got 30 years on the last deal we did. The seller didn't even balk at that. Try to get the lowest interest rate possible. I mean, that's pretty much a no-brainer. I mean, interest rates now are between 4 and 4.5%. You know, you can negotiate with the seller. Try to get the lowest interest rate possible. And you know what? Something else you can throw in there. You guys that are buying a property that needs a lot of work, why don't you tell the seller, listen, how about doing interest only for the first 6 months or for the first year? You'll never know unless you ask. You know, and we always assume what we want. You never know what the other party sitting across the table wants. So always ask, hey, listen, there's a lot of work to do in this property. Can I pay you interest only for 6 months? That extra money you're saving on principal can go right back into the property. And you know, the other last thing I would like to say about is longer terms. Try to get the longest term possible. I mean, we got 5 years on ours. We're going to refinance within the next year, so we'll be okay. But try to get 7-year terms. Try to get 10-year terms. They're really great, and it's really great protection for you.
Yeah, and so what I'm going to do now is tee up the 281-unit deal that we've been talking about. Now, this was a older mom-and-pop family. They were in their 70s. They had 281 units. They built them all themselves. We were talking to the broker. We went to look at it. We were kind of surprised at how beautiful everything was because he didn't get any bites on it. So we actually went up, took a look at the property with him, and kind of fell in love with it because we were just so surprised at how nice these units and how well-maintained they were, being that it was a mom and pop. And so we started talking to him a little bit, and the broker brought up the notion that a previous offer that they had was for a fully owner-financed deal. And we just were like, why didn't you tell us this before? You know, we couldn't believe that he actually said it. And so when he brought that up, we started talking to different banks and trying to find out ways that we could get it done by just having them finance the down payment. So the banks were looking for 20% down. So we actually, out of the 281 units, there was 149 that were on a contiguous parcel, and then there was the remaining units, 132, that were spread around this college. So they weren't all on one contiguous parcel. So we split the property actually into two LLCs and went to two different banks to get the deal done. And And we found two motivated banks that actually wanted to do it. And over, you know, months of negotiating, we got them to sign on to the idea of a 20% owner financed deal and for the down payment. So we actually were able to execute this with a mom and pop group with no money down. Which, you know, it wasn't our first deal, so we had a lot of experience. We had a good track record with these banks, and that's why we were able to get this. If this would have been the first deal that we attempted to do, I don't think there's any chance in hell that we get this. Do you, Gino?
No, and there's a couple of things that, you know, I'd like to mention about the deal. The first thing was that we didn't even ask for the owner financing. The deal is listed at $12.6 million. It's one of those sweet spot deals where these institutions don't want it. It's hard to manage, and the mom and pop investors can't afford to do it. So there's less competition in these deals. So that means less competition. You can buy it at a better price. It was priced at $12.6 million. His first offer was $11 million and 20% owner financed. I mean, I didn't even know what to say to Jake. I was so believe it. I was beside myself. The numbers worked for us. The great thing about this property was, when we took it over, it was doing, you know, and when we talk about mom and pops, we always talk about just the deferred maintenance, but they weren't tracking their income properly. They weren't collecting their income. They had the acrimony, the partnership. They wanted to retire. They were burned out, not from from the deferred maintenance standpoint, but from the actual income and expense standpoint. We saw that there was inefficiencies in there. And what made this deal really cool, the banker saw this and he was talking about it to his board members, and the board member hesitated on doing this. And he said to them, hey guys, listen, if they default on the deal, the owner is going to take the property back. Who better to take the property back than someone who's already owned it? So they had that protection there, the banks. Banks actually saw that. I was shocked that they made that conclusion, because sometimes banks are just from a number standpoint, but they saw the value that they had. They had a secure deal, a deal that was cash flowing, a deal from our perspective that we have in our credibility book. This is our bread and butter. This is where we make our money on these mom and pops. They love our business plan. They've seen us execute it from the previous 300 units that we owned. So they know that our strategy works, and we know how to implement our strategy.
Yeah, and so what we're looking at now is actually something that Gino alluded to a minute ago. We took the property from $140,000 per month, and we've actually got it up to $170,000 per month. What we're looking to do now is refi that property sometime next year, and we need to get a $14 million valuation. If we can get that $14 million valuation, we will actually be able to pay off the note that the owners held for the 20% down, and move this, as we were referring to earlier, from a recourse loan to a non-recourse loan. Looking to do earlier, we're going to have a non-recourse loan. We should be able to lower the interest rate, and we will bump the amortization out to 30 years. So that's actually bringing it all together, all the points that we talked on in the beginning. We're taking the mom and pop, we're refining it to non-recourse, we're getting a lower rate, hopefully, and we're paying off the prior seller, so we're just going to have one note with a 30-year AM.
Jake and I have talked about the big deal, 280 units. I had already talked about the small deal, our 26 unit. Owner financing can be used in other areas too, guys. You guys got to try to be as creative as you can in real estate. And one of the ways we used the owner financing wasn't really owner financing. The third deal we got into was 136 units, and at the time it was a lot of money. It was $4 million for us, but we were trying to scratch and crawl for the money, and we came up with this idea. I don't even know who came up with the idea. Maybe Jake, I don't know, maybe the broker. The broker was willing to take actually wrote a note. We got a note for $50,000 for part of the money, and that was just, I mean, at the time that really helped us bridge the gap. The seller was stuck at his number. Our group was stuck at our number. We had to make up this $50,000. And what do? We ended up writing a note. And, you know, he took the note for $50,000. And we paid him, how much was it, Jake? Like $400 a month or whatever it was?
Something like that. Yeah. And then we paid him back when we refied it.
That's right. And 18 months later, when we refied it, he got his money back. But he was willing. And that's one of the key things. Our team member was willing to do that. And the broker, you have to get a broker who understands the seller financing. And for him, it's great because he's making an extra $500 a month doing nothing. And he's got the note is secured with the property. So he knows us. And for him, it was a home run. And for us, it was just a game changer for us because we really were tapped out. We really had nowhere else to go for the money. So he made it happen, and he really helped us out.
But that's the thing. In these deals, when you need an extra $50,000, $100,000, there's always a way. If you just really, rack your brain, think about it, there's always a way to get it done, because it's not easy. Everyone is struggling with, how do I find the money? How do I get the money to get into these deals? And you just got to be resourceful. You got to partner with people, and you got to just rack your brain sometimes. And we were $50,000 short, and what we ended up coming up with, the broker held the note. We were able to lower the price, and we got it done.
Let's talk real quick before we wrap this up on how you start with your financing. What I recommend everybody doing is going on to a website called Udemy, UDEMY.com. They are a great site, have a lot of stuff on education. Jake and I created something called the Credibility Book. I think everyone should at least take a look at that product, see what we're talking about. You guys have to really create a business plan for yourself. Get your own strategy. Pick a niche. Jake and I picked our niche. We like multifamily apartments. We like to actually own them, and we like to actually run them. That's our niche. I think everybody out there, if you're fixing and flipping, that's great. Just pick that niche, work that niche, learn it, and get your credibility book up. And that's how you're going to start financing the deals. With this credibility book, it's a business plan. People are going to know what your strategy is. They're going to see your successes. That's what they want to see. They don't want to. Such a big part of real estate is all about, you know, your networking and who you know. So, I mean, what better thing to do than to set up this credibility book and give it out to people? Let them know you, let them see your successes, and start building that network.
Here's one more quick tip. Pick, as Gino was just saying, pick your investment strategy first. If you're going to invest in multifamily apartments, outline that in your book. I'm going to invest in multifamily apartments. Here's why. But then pick your market, because a lot of times people will just start looking for deals. That's not the right way to do it. Pick the investment vehicle that you're going to invest in, say multifamily apartments, and then find out, where do I want to invest in these things, and then identify the deal within that market. A lot of times people just start looking at random deals all over the place, and it gets crazy. Pick the vehicle first, then the market, then the property will come to you.
And then once that property comes to you, get your financing in order. Don't wait. It's funny because Jake was talking to me about, why do these deals take so long? There's like a dead period in between getting the appraisal, and get your financing up and going. Don't be the one that drags the deal and takes the deal a long time. Let them waste time. Get your financing out. Get the deal to your banker as soon as possible. You know, it's also a good idea for him to see the deal, especially if they're really intimate with the market. They know the market. They'll tell you right off the bat if it's a good deal or it's a bad deal. Our banker knows exactly what we like to buy, and he's pretty much amazed. The last deal we did, he asked us, how'd you get it for this price? And, you know, so it's reassuring to us that we know we're buying it right, because when a banker says that, that's really gives us the confidence to go out there and to pull the trigger on the deal. But at the same time, you give him time to start working the numbers, and you don't want them to rush, because it's tough when you're under the gun. It seems like every deal you're under the gun. So get your financing done as soon as possible.
And guys, once you get in the game and you're starting to do deals, it's not going to be, where do I find the money? If you can show people an investment return and you're partnering with people, it's not going to be, where do I find the money? It's where can I find the great deal? So keep that in mind. Get the first deal. That's so why it's so important. Get your first deal under your belt. Find a good property that's going to make money, and then you can use that to build off of and bring in other folks to get your next deal done. Because when people see what you're doing and you're outlining that in your credibility book that you can get from us from Udemy.com, that's going to show people, this guy's for real. They're making it happen. So the keys here: you're buying right, you're managing right, you're financing right. When you're financing right, you're moving your asset to non-recourse, longer amortization, lower rate, longer term. Okay, that is really the crux of the finance right. Now, again, we touched on Udemy.com. You can get our financing credibility book on Udemy.com. This is going to help you partner with people. It's going to help you present better to banks and present better to partners. Gino, that's all I have for today. You got anything else?
Yeah, the last thing I'd like to say is listen to that podcast we did with our banker. I mean, he's going to give you some great ideas of what banks look for, some rules of thumb that they look for. It's really important that you really get your network and you start networking with bankers and with private money.
Perfect. All right, guys, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jake. See you guys.
We trust that you enjoy the Wheelbarrow Profits podcast. Visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. See you next time when Jake and Gino share more of their investing secrets with you.